Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, put down the popcorn, peanuts, whatever you're snacking on. This is Larry Charles, one half of the Game Dev Unchained podcast, number one podcast for game developers and the lifestyle thereof. I promise you, I've been saying it every week and I've been right. Thanks for listening. Helping me bring this podcast to you is the only person I know to successfully beat Spider-Man the game and all the DLC in one life, Mr. Brandon Pham.
What's up, everybody? I just got off and I just finished, and I am here to help bring you this episode of Game Dev Unchained. Along with me, a special guest, Dave Mervick.
Hey, good morning. Dave. Welcome.
Hello.
How's it going? On. Yeah. Where are you joining us, by the way?
Where from?
Yeah.
The south of Sweden.
Oh, man.
I work from home a few days a week, so I'm out in a place called Veberöd.
Oh, nice.
Which is out in the woods.
That's super. I wouldn't even ask how to spell that.
just with some letters.
Yeah. I'm going to assume you said words.
Yeah, just pick some letters.
So this is the part of the podcast, Dave, that we ask our guests, such as yourself, a little bit about your background, where you're from, where you are, where you're heading. To give some context to our listeners out there about who they're listening to right now.
Okay. Liverpool is a place you probably will have heard of. I'm from a place near there. And I've been in the industry since 2001, September 10th. At a place called Warthog in Manchester, which doesn't exist anymore. But I was a tester there for 3.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to me, brother. I came out with no idea what to do with my life out of college. So he said, I've got a cool job. And he was a designer called Starlancer.
Mm-hmm.
So he got me 2 weeks work experience there, and that stretched out to 3.5 years.
Hey.
That's it. I went to Traveller's Tales working on a bunch of Lego games. I met my wife working on a rally game, Rally Championship, out in Helsingborg. So that was my first meeting with Sweden and the first meeting with my wife. And then, we moved to Malmö, and that's where we found Tasha. So I've been there for almost 9 years, which is terrifying. I've never been anywhere for more than 3.5 years, so something's going well.
Man, that's a good story. I wish I would, meet my wife in general ever, but let alone meet a gamer wife. That's two steps up on me. You got
just go up to every woman you meet and say, "Are you my wife?" Lysis, honest. If they look terrified,
you just need one. You just need one.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. And so where are you right now? What studio are you at right now?
Tasha Studios.
Tasha Studios. And they're known for what games?
I don't know if we're known, really. I think in our little bubble, we're known for Little Nightmares and less known for Static, which is a game we made for PSVR.
Mm-hmm.
But we also worked on Little Big Planet Vita.
Mm.
And then helped out on Little Big Planet 2, Little Big Planet 3, way back on Little Big Planet 1, and then Ragdoll Kung Fu Fist of Plastic, which is where the guys first got in touch with Media Molecule. So
I see.
So yeah, but Static and Little Nightmares are the our two first games that we made all on our own.
Nice.
You were there for the entirety of both projects, right? Or at least okay. Cool, because Little Nightmares actually picked up a lot of acclaim online. I know a lot of people talked about it. The setting, the ambiance, and the art direction, very memorable, sir.
Yeah.
So congrats to your team and crew over there.
Yeah, we've got an amazing art team. So, I think they've been chomping at the bit, really, to to kind of show what they can do, you know, because you could see if you did ever play Little Big Planet Vita, you could see that there was something they wanted to kind of show. But you can't kind of flex too much. I mean, Little Big Planet is what it is like, but those characters got a bit creepy.
Sorry, you said a console I'm not familiar with. Vita? What's a Vita?
Yeah,
they just discontinued the Vita, actually.
So. Yeah, it was like the less popular Game Gear.
It's the Nintendo Switch before they knew how to market it.
Yeah, exactly.
Vita, dude. Yeah, seriously. I actually do like the Vita. I like both of them. I had a good time with both.
Yeah, so I agree, totally. But you've got to give it some shit as well, haven't you?
Yeah.
Totally fair.
So Little Nightmares, you're being humble, but when I saw it for the first time, it was very groundbreaking. It was visually striking, and the context and the narrative elements about it was very enticing. So how long did you guys have that cooking before you went in production?
I mean, that specific idea, maybe like a year or two, we've been like slowly brewing on, you know, the kind of thing that we could do and the kind of place and what it would mean and all that sort of stuff. But I mean, I don't know if you know, like way, way, way back when the company was first created, it was like, I think like 10 students.
Mm-hmm.
Way, way too ambitious, but skilled enough to fool people that they could pull that off, if you know what I mean. Yeah. They went to E3 with a prototype called City of Metronome and knocked everyone's socks off. They were like that, ooh, we need this. But no one actually, you know, went to that final stage and kind of gave them money to make it. And the game would have been huge. Mm-hmm. And there was 10 students.
Let me ask this, you know, devil's advocate now, the team has money, there's still opportunity, I'm assuming. Is there any chance you can go back and revisit?
Drink butter.
Postmates is here.
we get asked that now and again, which is that flattering. It's nice that people even know it. I mean, it's probably because I've told that story so many times, people now know it. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I don't know. I think, for me, I think of it like a poison chalice. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Back then, I mean, it's the reason I found Tosha and I was desperate to work for them. I was like, I am in the shit that you guys want to make, you know? Mm-hmm. But, maybe your idea of something is better and you shouldn't make it. It had its time. It had its chance.
Mm-hmm.
If we went and made it now, then maybe all those people that kind of have their idea of what it could be would be disappointed. I don't know. I just feel like we've gone from there. When I look back at that prototype, I think it was cool back then, but maybe now it would need to be a completely different game. Or maybe that was Little Nightmares.
Yeah.
Little Nightmares is a totally different game, but you still, it's the same people that made it.
Mm.
But this is where they are now, a lot darker and more depressed.
How big was the team for Little Nightmares, if you don't mind me asking?
About maybe like 20 people.
Oh, wow. So well, it's like a true indie title then.
We work with Bandai on it, so I mean, you know, we can't claim indie on in that respect, but I mean, we were a small team and the team worked dead hard on it though. I mean, there's a lot of people kind of got close to burnout on that because, you know, no one at Tosha really can let things go. They can't say this is good enough.
Yeah.
Which is good and bad. I think it's really, really inspiring to work with people who won't just say this'll do. Now I'm going to go home and watch HBO or whatever. Right. There was people just sleeping in the office.
Ooh.
Day after day after day, not because they were being forced to. They were kind of, it was their own kind of compulsion. So, it was a small team considering. Yeah, what came out was pretty impressive, I think.
So when you guys first went into working on that game, I'm not assuming that your team was like, yeah, it's going to be so successful. It's going to lead to, you know, interviews, it's going to lead to awards, it's going to lead to XYZ. I guess, what was the glimmer of hope that, like, all right, guys, we're doing this, you know, we're excited. Did you see any of the success coming? Did you see any of the profitability, or I guess, did you have a feeling from the initial design, or are you happy that this is the result, but, you know, had no idea that it would achieve this?
You don't know Swedish people, do you? No, they have got like zero ego. Oh. I'm not strictly Swedish.
So I can find a wife in Sweden, it sounds like.
No, I mean, there's just like I say, are you my wife? Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, honestly, you always hope. And like when we were like maybe four or five people in the very beginning who were talking about this idea. Like I say, just like, oh, that'd be cool, wouldn't it? You know, wouldn't it be amazing if we made a game where people kind of just had to figure it out for themselves, and we didn't tell them what the story was, blah, 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 and all this. Mm-hmm. And it became the Hunger teaser trailer, and then it became the prototype and blah, 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 blah. At no point were we like that. This is going to sell a million copies. Good. It's just, you just don't. Anyone that says that, I don't want to know those people, because I mean,
publishers.
Like, it's that way. Oh, it's publishers, isn't it? I mean, publishers have to think that way.
Yeah.
But like, as a developer, if you're thinking about, I want to make a game that sells a million copies, your focus is in the wrong place.
Amen. So
just made up when we got that money from Nordic Game and Creative Europe, which we weren't expecting either. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was my job for months, was like putting together this brief design doc. It was like 36-page design document for what Hunger was. I mean, it wasn't just me. Obviously, we had our amazing artists and designers working and stuff, but I was putting this thing together. And as I got it together, I'm like, oh, you know what, man? This actually sounds like a cool game. I hope we hope we get to make it. And then it was like, yeah, you just won a whole bunch of thousands of kronas. I mean, oh shit, now we have to make something with that. So that's how we managed to make the Hunger teaser. And we took that to GDC and wooed Bandai.
Mm-hmm.
Which again, you're like that. What, who? Really? What, Bandai?
Don't know Bandai.
Really?
Namco Bandai and... Yeah,
yeah, it's just crazy.
Childhood stuff.
Yeah,
man, totally. I mean, it's just that who would think that would kind of happen for your first game that you're making, you know?
Mm. I'm always interested in like the beginning stages, especially even with Hearthstone Studios making a few games and establishing themselves. You guys still have to kind of start over, especially with like an original IP kind of showing that you guys have an idea that you can take to fruition, right?
Yeah.
So those beginning stages of you putting together a pitch packet and shopping it around, what were the highs and lows of that? Where, you know, of course it's fun kind of gathering your best stuff and seeing it come together, but I'm sure there was a lot of no's before yeses, right?
What, from us or from publishers, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
You mean those from publishers?
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, luckily, I wasn't trying to sell the idea to publishers, because that was other people's work at the time. But I know there was a lot of no's within the studio before there were any, which again is a dead process. We were like that. No. And because I think that was the thing, like you touched on there. I mean, we were doing LBP and we did Tearaway Unfolded and all this. And when you're working within someone else's idiom, there's a nice safety net there, you know. Oh yeah, we're Sony exclusive, and Emma did all the hard work, and we'll just do our stuff. We could make our own thing if we wanted, but you know. And then you get the chance, and you're like that. Just more, because you know, yeah, we put a cool pitch together and stuff, but once when we started putting this design doc together, then you have to figure out, hang on, is this a game? Where's the game in this? Because yeah, we can put great art together, I can write some great words which will, you know, get all people excited.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, when you look behind that, there has to be a game there. So there was a lot of angst there, is making sure that we're getting this chance here. We've got to nail it. So yeah, there was a whole load of no's at that point where we really kind of make sure that the money we were getting and this chance that we had to do it properly, we were gonna do the best we could. Like, but yeah, as far as publishers goes, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And did you find a similar, I guess, initial selling point or trying to discover like the gameplay in, you know, putting together the pitch and getting your team ready to start making Static? Because it seems like it could be another one of those games where you're like, oh, dang, like we have these cool ideas. We have this great art. We're going to explore the inner psyche of the mind. But how is that going to be fun? You know what I mean? I guess before you actually made the game, were you having those similar kind of...
Static, to me, it's only in retrospect... when I look at the two games, I can see similarities in. And obviously that's going to be because we've got similar minds working on this stuff. Like, but that one, I was in straight away.
Yeah.
I mean, that I am all up for that. Like, and it was a much smaller team. We were about 8 people, 9 people. And I hate to say it, but it was our CEO that came up with that idea.
Hey,
not the one too. That made it good.
That guy.
Thankfully, we took it from him before he could ruin the idea. Yeah, but it was when we just got hold of the DualShock 4.
Mm.
And he's sitting there because he's a coder as well. So, you know, he's at that point, he was trying to figure out something cool to do with the DualShock 4. And he's like, what can we do with this? And that was the idea.
Mm.
Exploring a controller, and that was where Static came from. But back then, before I was brought in, it was like a horror game. Because that's where you go straight away, don't you? Your hands are trapped in the box, or it's going to be like Saw or something like that. So it was really kind of grotesque and that. But then when we got the people together, we were of a similar mind, and it became a lot more kind of existential horror. About your relationship with technology and feeling alone.
You sold me.
Tested. I love it. Have you played it?
No. I'm saying, like, just basically talking about it. Dude, you still. I don't have a PSVR.
Oh, that's everyone tells us the same reason. We should bundle a copy of the PSVR with every copy of Static sold.
I would love it.
But no, dead proud of it. It's a smaller title, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We're no less proud of it. Do you know they came out in the same week as well?
Oh, really?
That was such bad planning on our part. Like, looking at the schedule going, hold on a minute. Oh, God. And so, like, Static came out, I think, on the Monday, and then Little Nightmares came out on the Friday the same week. So, yeah, that was a barrel of laughs.
Yeah,
I was gonna say when you were like, "Oh, our CEO came up with the idea." I thought you were gonna lead into that pitch where, like, you know, he's got the coffee mug looking over someone's desk. He's like, "No. You know what you should do? Here's your game." You know what I mean?
Add more game to it.
Yeah. My old boss said, "Put some fun in this corner over here." Like,
I won't name names, but like when I was at Warthog, we had a guy who wasn't in game development side of things. He came up and. It's like, all these crashes, guys, can you not just put something in the code that says, if crash, go to... like that. Where have you been all of these decades of game development?
That's it.
Nobody thought of that.
Oh, amazing, my God.
Man. Yeah, if crash...
We should make a t-shirt.
That's a t-shirt.
Right? That has potential. We could give me a day with
if
it.
Crash, go to, t-shirt. Don't.
Yeah. One of the things that we always hear about, obviously, this was a passion project. And the word passion gets thrown a lot, especially in the bigger companies, falsely, right? But like when it is like a team of 20 people, and this is something that you guys... you know, not necessarily in a bad way, but you kind of have to work with like a chip on your shoulder. You have something to show, right? You got something to prove. And so that inevitably, you know, you spend an extra time in the office, making sure that it's at the utmost quality. And there's a, I feel like there's a difference with a lot of listeners out there, because a lot of times we talk about like crunch time and the horror stories of that. We associate it with mostly the bigger studios, right? As forced upon. But, you know, this is a great point to kind of showcase that with smaller teams, smaller studios, with something that actually they want to say, it's a little bit different, right? Where this is kind of like voluntarily crunching, which is kind of necessary because you guys are all doing the jobs of like two or three people each, right? So how long was the development from pre-production to end of production? How long did it take to make Little Nightmares with 20 people?
I can't say specifically now. I mean, maybe like 18 months, 2 years, something. Oh, wow. Like
that. But
if you research this and find I'm wrong, mm-hmm. I will. But I think it was thereabouts. But no, I mean, it's interesting you say that, because I think if you look at the two projects side by side, Little Nightmares and Static, I would say, sorry, my cat's going absolutely mental outside. He's looking at me with just terror in his eyes. Why are you doing this to me?
Where's the food?
Because I hate you. Yeah, like Little Nightmares, it was a bit half and half, I would say. Like, there was elements of, yeah, like I've said already, like people who don't want to put things out that felt half done or not, you know, indicative of their work and their standards. But also, I mean, you know, you're working with a publisher and a big publisher, and they have deadlines, and we agree upon these milestones. And so it's not like, oh, hey guys, you know, whenever you like, be creative like that. No, get this shit done, man. If you have to stay late, then do it. And it's fair. Everyone really should come into the industry with their eyes open in that respect. I think some stuff, when you're talking about the massive studios and people just don't have a life for God knows how long, that's not okay, I think, you know. Or at least, again, join that studio knowing bye-bye life. Mm-hmm. But no, I mean, with Little Nightmares, it was a bit of both. And fair, I think it's fair enough, as long as you agree on fair milestones and anything that kind of gets extended. Again, you have another discussion, don't you? But with Static, we had a completely different experience. That was made with Sony Strategic Content, who just basically, they were very, very picky over the studios they worked with. They bought into the idea, and again, we agreed on what we were going to deliver, get money. And then it was amazing. They didn't want to know. They were like, that's cool, man. Let's have it. That sounds like a cool idea. And we were just in absolute heaven. Hey, we had an idea. Can we do it? Oh, okay, yeah, that sounds mental, man. Go on. So that was like real, real creative freedom, I would say, with that one. And sadly, the people we worked with at Sony Strategic aren't there anymore. So we're devastated.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you, who did you work with? And like, get out my pad.
Ben Andak was our producer from Sony Strategic, an absolute top fella. And yeah, probably like my best experience ever, like start to finish working on a game. And that's taking nothing away from Namco Bandai. God, they're going to kill me for getting that wrong way around. Because they're great to, you know, they've been great to work with as well. But yeah, Sony Strategic was pure just.
Perfect.
Yeah. You hear that, indie devs?
Go ahead. Bring them back.
Well, I want to ask you a little bit about the writing, because you said if we go back to where your career starts, your brother gets you a 2-week stint. I think you were saying you were doing QA initially. I guess. Okay, so where did you make your first transition into actually offering development services for a game company, and what was that first role?
What you mean when I got out of QA?
Yes. What was the, like, all right, I'm contributing content to a game and I am a blank designer, or were you writing already?
No, I mean, I've always been writing, but not in any kind of professional capacity. But it was when I was at Travelers. I got into digital marketing by accident.
Okay.
Like, as everyone should. I realized it had gone wrong. And so I got back in touch with an old colleague from Warthog, Paul Flanagan, who was then, you know, had a production at Traveller's Tales. I started begging him. I said, man, I'll make the tea. I'll clean the toilets. I will do anything. Mm-hmm. Let me back in. I've made a terrible mistake. And after 6 weeks of mailing him basically every day, he's like, oh, Jesus, man, all right. I'm in for an interview. So I started working there on a game called Prince Caspian. Mm-hmm. And from then I moved to TT Fusion, which was like the sister company of Traveller's Tales. And so they were making all the console games of the Lego stuff. Mm-hmm. There is where I started working as a designer. So I worked on Lego Batman.
Nice.
And PSP.
Nice.
Then I did Lego Indie 2, you know, incorporating the wonderful fourth installment of Indiana Jones.
How was the Lego experience? So Legos is always like there, right? The Lego games, and they're always well done, but it's never like top charting, but it's just there consistently good.
Yeah. Yeah.
How was that experience working on those type of franchises?
Dependable.
Yeah, very
dependable. Amazing. It was amazing. I mean, like, as far as, I mean, I didn't have any formal education that you can get now in like terms of like game and level design. Mm-hmm. I got an old fashioned way, like going, do QA, and then you know people and all that. So it was amazing education for me. I was like working with people I knew already as well. And they put me in touch with like really, really experienced designers, and they just eased me in. You know, it was like, yeah, oh, this is how cameras work, and this is how we kind of place objects, and blah blah blah. And as I kind of got the hang of different elements of level design, it gave me more and more and more. So it was really, really nice experience. And I'd loved it. I'd played the original Lego Star Wars, and I absolutely loved it. I don't love it much now. They don't feel quite the same to me.
Yeah.
I think ever since I played Lego Lord of the Rings, where they started using like actual footage and like dialogue, wasn't it? Actual dialogue from the movies. It was always like a cool silent slapstick movie thing for me, like the Lego stuff. But no, it was that good. It was a really, really nice way into the principles of level design and game design.
And done. Boom. Check me out, man. Look what I made.
What did you make? Let me see this stuff.
I made none of this. I actually just arranged it all, but thanks to Quixel, I can claim that I've made this pretty cool little environment in my own little test level pretty fast, actually. So, but it looks good. You can't tell, though. That's the funny thing.
Oh, I've heard of Quixel. Quixel is the photogrammetry asset and texture library, right, that you can use for your own projects. We happen to have a code. I don't know if you know about this, Larry, but we have our own GDU code that gives you a percentage off. Again, it's GDU10. Mm-hmm. Just make sure you enter that code at the checkout. It will give you 10% off for the first year. So this is a big code because it's a discount on a discount. Because if you're not going monthly and you decide to go yearly, Quixel already gives you a discount. Mm-hmm. A percentage off, but with our code, it gives you an extra 10% off because we love you so much. So again, go over to quixel.com on checkout, GU10, and then you're going to get your discount and move on with your life, making great art again.
Yeah. You kind of came up through like an apprenticeship situation. How do you personally feel about that now? And would you offer the same for somebody who emailed you every day for 6 weeks, the same opportunity? Now that you're on the other side.
I'll watch your answers.
If it was me, no. I wouldn't let me in.
Who would do such a thing?
The thing is, like, now it's so competitive, but I think Tasha probably would. Mm-hmm. If there was someone who had an aptitude for something, you know, like, oh, I played with this in my spare time. Would you give me a chance? We'd give them a chance and we'd see if they had something, because for us, it is almost as important that you've got like the right mindset, that you're inventive or imaginative, or you just kind of want to make a certain kind of games. And if you've got the capacity to then learn the skills that will help you to pull that off, we would absolutely give people a chance. But I mean, you hear 90% of people you hear from, it's like, I love games. Can I work for you? I love playing games. Like yeah, because that's how it is. hey, I love watching movies. Can I be, you know, head of Fox? Work, but so there's got to be like a balance of things, really, and it, you know, that's all. But yeah, we totally give people a chance. I think you still like QA is still a viable entry point as well if you're able to come in and try that. But there's a dead good education in Malmö called the Game Assembly, and we get a lot of our people from there as interns, you know. But that's like a 2-3 year education where you learn Unreal, Maya, all the sort of stuff. And it's in a game dev situation, so it feels like when you're working on a project there, it's how it is in real game dev. Yeah. So you know,
that's transition.
It's so competitive now. You kind of have to be a little bit picky. You wouldn't take me,
right?
But yeah, to answer your original question, the first game I did writing on was at Travelers. It was on Lego Rock Band of all things, if you can imagine, can believe that. Writing all the shit that you read in Lego Rock Band, all of the background texts and all of the spoofy names and spoofy songs, everything, that was all me.
How did you get primed for that role? So I guess what I'm digging at is, you know, were you always, you know, a big into writing individual? Is this something you're discovering? Like, how did you yourself, like, okay, this is the lane for me?
It was the only thing I was ever good at. Right. It's terrible, really, to not be good at anything else, but I just always loved it, and I got a kick out of it. And I didn't know I would get into game development. So when it did, and then there was a chance to do anything, my old design director, Mike Taylor, he's the one that gave me the chance, because he knew I kept moaning about it, like, just let me do anything. Let me write. And so he's like, all right, do you want to write this nonsense then? So to him, it was just give me a big spreadsheet of stuff that he needed. You know, like, I'd give 10,000 names for these characters. I'm like, okay, thanks, man. You know, and so that was my way in. So when it came to Tarsia, again, it was as a designer on LVP, but they knew as well that I really wanted a shot. And luckily, there was a shot on LVP Vita. Said, yeah, we want you to have a crack at the story for this. And that was it then.
Amen. Congrats.
Yeah. Totally unplanned.
And kind of roll back to the student thing. Like, it is very competitive, where I would say like 5-10 years ago, where the entryway to from QA or from the streets, someone random just emailing was viable. But now, it being such a high competitive arena, we kind of need that funnel through the school system to help kind of just whittle it down to the serious candidates. And I always like and appreciate the studios that take a chance at the fresh crop and not have just seniors at a studio, because it can get kind of incestuous in those type of studios. It's the same type of thinking. And in the game industry that requires innovative ways to kind of stand out from the rest, the blend of both old and new has always interested me, and it's no secret that a lot of the studios that really succeed in great ways have that unique mix. It's a sad thing though, but in the States, like, a lot of our schools are closing down because the schools are a business over here, especially for game design, game art are still vocational schools. They're not, you know, there's some universities that actually have programs, but so they're treated like a business, so that for profit, and so they get students through loans and stuff. So there's a lot of schools in the States that are closing down for that reason, where, you know, they kind of swindle kids into paying for it without, you know, giving them actual jobs by the end of graduation. So it's a weird situation over here. Sad. So it's kind of on a I would say a downward spiral in terms of the game education side. It's not thriving as it used to.
School's left, right?
That's really sad to hear, though, because I mean it's a growing industry, and it's something that people are more and more wanting to get into. Why on earth would you actually make it less available?
Yes,
where I stand on it, I think an institution that actually cared about the education, like that, like education was first, like we want to educate people, would probably have no problem.
Yeah.
But it's when you go into it like, hey, here's an opportunity to make a lot of money. How are we doing that? Oh, we're going to do this education thing. Right.
Yeah, like, yeah.
That ends up being a lot of the reason why we see this type of stuff happening. There's no responsibility.
Yeah, of course.
There's no, ethics.
Mm. No.
It's just, hey, get as many people in as we can qualify for these loans and we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Wonderful people.
But it's also, you know, kind of in response to how the industry is shaping up. A lot of big studios are taking safer bets. Mm. A lot of like serialized type of franchises. So when I look at Tarsier Studios and what you guys are doing with Little Nightmares and those type of games that actually innovate and is bringing something freshly new and still have a team that is reasonably small and achieve like AAA quality, that is what I see the future of the industry going, because the way we're cracking at things with like 400 plus teams. I mean, Amy Hennig from Uncharted fame was just recently in the news about that, how the way we're making games obviously don't work anymore. And so there's a lot of old guards kind of shifting their mindset to survive, to make games nowadays, because even with credentials, they're having a lot of trouble kind of just seeing a game production all the way through. Because big companies don't want to take that chance anymore. So you guys are really paving the way for the future of the studio. Like Little Nightmares is amazing. I can't believe you guys only made it with 20 people. it looked like a big team behind that.
I hope I'm not lying about that.
It's like, oh, 300.
What are you talking about? If it was 50 people. Oh,
sorry, those 30 30s.
People for 6 years.
I wasn't talking about you. Sorry about the other guys.
I think it was like about 20 people. Yeah, we weren't many at all. No, I mean, I hope it goes that way, because they're the kind of games. That's where it came from. Like, what kind of game do we want to play?
Yes,
don't want to play. I hate massive games though. So I am probably the worst person to talk to if you want anything like that's on the pulse as far as the stream goes. Like, I am not interested at all. I find it so dull, and a lot of the kind of the stuff I enjoy about what we did with Little Nightmares and Static actually is this come on, we can do better than this. We have to try harder. We want gamers to try harder. We can't just go, hey, you know, if you press that thing over there, an interesting thing might happen. It's so, what am I, a monkey? Am I just doing this? You tell me what to do, I do it, and you peanut.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's nonsense. So yeah, we wanted to just go a little bit back to that, and you can when you're a smaller team, you know, and you're a smaller studio, and there's less money balancing on you, because then, yeah, like you say, people go for the safe bets. These are the things we know already. Yeah, but where did that come from? At some point, someone will have taken a risk, and that's where the mainstream came from.
Right.
You know, these things kind of evolve, and like, oh. You know, I remember when I played Tomb Raider on the PlayStation, that felt like out of this world to me. But down the line, we've got the latest Tomb Raider, which I'm sorry. No, don't do it for me anymore.
You don't like Tomb Raider Uncharted?
No.
it's not that game anymore. It's not the game I knew anymore. Right. And that's purely just out of diluting itself. And like, what, Uncharted ripped off Tomb Raider anyway.
I know, and isn't that funny?
Then Tomb Raider comes back and goes, ooh, that tastes sick. And, you know, what are you doing? You were better than this.
I grew up on single-player narrative games, and that's a sector that is being drowned out by the multiplayer battle royale games. It's a risk now. Like, it's unless it's made by a small team, publishers won't bat an eye at a game like that. Seriously. And it's, you know, in response to, you know, how streaming works nowadays. And so game designers have to adapt to that in some way. But there's a balance there. I definitely think that people can explore. But I'm with you with the popular games. Like, there is a huge crowd that are kind of, I wouldn't say, well, annoyed with how the big games nowadays are kind of like this part of the same formula. And as I mentioned before, incestuous, where they're kind of borrowing from each other.
Mm.
And it's up to the little guys kind of to innovate before they take notice and steal from that. Like, I'm probably the only guy around that does not really like the Battle Royale games right now. Mm. Like, I tried most of them. And it just feels like I'm just running around looting and then I get shot. It's like, oh, I think I see a guy. It's like spotting Bigfoot in my type of gameplay. And it's just not interesting. It's like, man, I kind of miss the Counter-Strike days where I can go in expecting to shoot someone and get my 20-minute thrill. But I'm spending 20 minutes just running around a big field now. I'm like the only person that doesn't like it, and obviously I'm an outlier because everyone in the world is playing Fortnite, Apex, everything.
Apex is like huge right now.
It's huge right now,
killing the game.
Yeah, but you know, I don't collecting things is not gameplay to me.
It's like, yeah, but I mean, I tried Modern Warfare way back. That was the last time I think I tried online gaming. That's far gone I am now. I had a go at that. I was like, dead. All right, again. Dead, right? I'm never playing that shit again.
Yes.
You know, it's mainly because I'm a bad gamer, but, you know, it's also...
I was going to say, let me represent the fans and just say, get good, right?
I am there, man, because I used to diss Rocket League so bad, like the guy, the main designer on Static, or one of them, Bjorn, he was an absolute amazing mind. Mm. He is just quality incarnate at Rocket League. And I would have it. I'm like, oh, that's a stupid game. But football with cars, get out of it. And I was rubbish at it, so I hated it. And then I like decided to try it and get good. And then I'm like, oh, that's actually quite good, this, isn't it? And so I finally put those two pieces together.
Right.
Yeah, so like,
you get better when you don't suck at them.
Where I am in game design, and just hearing what Brandon was saying, right? He's like, I spend 20 minutes running around looting, and then I get shot, and then that's my experience, right? Like, if you want to engage somebody, even if you have a very high skill cap, the suck part of the game experience still has to be good. You know what I mean? Like the training, the like, okay, I know I'm not good. I know I'm not on a competitive level yet, but I'm still having a moment to moment experience that I'm enjoying.
Yeah,
I think that's the ideal golden scenario for me as a designer would be like, all right, you know what? Yeah, you probably don't know how to shoot these guns very well, but traveling and moving around our map has such flow and feel to it that you might even just fall in love with that. And that will keep you around while you build up the other skills. You know what I mean? That's the way I would try to look at it, I guess.
I think for me, any kind of multiplayer, the only time I enjoy it is when it's local. I don't get the same kick out of people I don't see. It might as well be really good bots. Mm. I'm on a couch or in a room screaming at someone for being a douche. That's where the fun comes in. Yeah. We used to do that when I was at Travelers, I think it was. We used to play Trackmania.
Mm, Trackmania.
16 or 32 people screaming at each other.
Yeah.
Being a douche playing Trackmania, and that was fantastic multiplayer action. So yeah, I need to be in the same room as the people I hate.
I do have a game recommendation for you, actually, because I've spent 40 minutes talking to you, getting to know you. I know you started in writing. Not a big fan of multiplayer gaming. Do like short game sessions. So I have this really cool game I would like to recommend to you.
Okay.
We can play it right now, actually. So this game is called The Fast Five. I'm going to ask you five rapid-fire questions, and all I need from you are five rapid-fire answers.
Oh, no. I'm tense. I'm tense. Right, you
ready to give it a shot?
Go on.
All right. Question number one. Dun, 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 dun. What is your favorite game of all time?
Pro Evolution Soccer.
Okay. Well, that's good, because that's going to...
That was an awkward laugh.
No, it was expected, and you'll see why. Question number two. Least favorite video game system?
Oh, Dreamcast. Hated those controls.
That hurts.
Love the games, hated the controls.
Get out of here. We're done here. That's oh, man. That hurts.
They weren't controllers. They were UFOs. I'm sorry. Yeah.
I get you. That's fair enough. The controls weren't all that great. The system likes near and dear. Question number three, fictional series, show or book that people should know about.
Ooh. Oh, that's, I can't answer that rapid fire. Fictional series that people should know about. Better Things. Enough people aren't watching Better Things. Have you seen
Better Things? It's a show right now
with Pamela Adlon. Yeah.
All right. See, there you go. You got
all right. There's a series that you two should be watching.
All right, I'll do it. I'm going to do my research.
Yeah, man, after this. Watch it.
Question number four: best place to take a winter vacation.
Sweden, man. All the way north of Sweden.
Question number five: favorite football club.
I get out. It's Liverpool all the way. We're going to win the league.
And that's why I was laughing earlier, because I was like, all right, I think I have an idea of like who we're talking to here. So let me give you an opportunity to shout out your team. So when you said Pro Evolution Soccer was your favorite game, I was like, perfect.
Yeah,
you did good. It was a good time. It was a good time.
You know, that favorite series is gonna keep me awake at night. That, because I've got about a million that I'd recommend.
Mm. Well, but, you're more than welcome to come back when you think of two or three more. We always have repeat guests.
Mm. Yeah, I literally come on, say that, and then leave.
Drop the mic.
I got 1 hour of things that you should know.
Watch one. Alan Partridge. Goodbye.
So,
T-shirts here. Get your T-shirts. Brandon, you want one of these tight, awesome T-shirts that I'm wearing?
Hell yeah. I like to wear mine loose, but where do I get these shirts?
Well, I mean, if you didn't read the label, bluechamps.com, where we've got our little merch store open up now, people were asking about T-shirts. We finally did it right. We didn't just do T-shirts, but we also have hoodies now in case anyone wants to rock a hoodie. But again, Blue Champs is the parent for all the cool stuff that we're doing with Game Dev Unchained. You can go there and get our GDU T-shirts. You can get GameSchool Online T-shirts. All of our stuff in one happy place. Check out our really cool designs. And Game Dev Unchained has a dope shirt, actually, by the way. I'm really glad about how that one came out.
Yeah, the Versus series are still ongoing. If you're in support of Larry or Brandon, buy a black or yellow shirt. I'll let you guys make that association yourselves. So bluechamps.com, or if you want to go directly to our merch store, go to bluechamps.com/merch to check out all the cool stuff that you can do and support the podcast. And it'd be great if you wear our merchandise while listening. Isn't that super meta? So again, go to bluechamps.com or bluechamps.com. BLUchamps.com. The best way to remember is Brandon and Larry Unchained Champs.com. So bluechamps.com.
Champs.com.
I want to go back to Little Nightmares about how you guys started to really, once you guys got your publishers, you were working on the game, putting love and hours into it. Fast forward to when you guys released your teaser. When was your first public announcement? Exactly.
After the teaser. I mean, the first anyone knew of it, other than we got some money for a concept was, I think when we made the teaser.
Okay.
We released the week before a bunch of guys went to GDC.
GDC teaser.
So
how was that reception? You guys expected such a...
No, I mean, I think our art director was just... had a bit of a breakdown for a few seconds because everything was riding on it.
Mm-hmm. You
know, we'd worked so hard on it, and this was, you know, we all knew this was our shot. And he just, when we pressed go on that video, he just said, he just sat there with a bottle of scotch. and then you just started to see thousands and thousands and thousands of people watching it. I mean, still nowhere near Sneezing Panda, which I'm a bit offended by. But, you know, we were made up with it anyway, that we got like it was a few hundred thousand views, like over like a day. Mm-hmm. And people started to notice it. It started to show up on websites that we've actually heard of. Mm-hmm. So that was quite a big deal, yeah. So, yeah, it was amazing. And it was really nice for them to go to GDC with any kind of buzz mm-hmm. about the game, you know.
And how did you guys get treated in the comment section?
Generally quite nice, I think. Mm. In fact, I think it was almost completely nice.
There you go. That's a huge indicator.
The first time I did an interview where people saw my face, I was terrified of the comment section. Because, do you know what was lovely though? The worst thing, it was surreal. It still makes me laugh to this day. It was like, I was scrolling down, and I was like, oh, someone, 1 minute 37, Dave Mervick has no earlobes. Like that. Ah, I don't. But they felt compelled to tell the world that I've got no earlobes. So, yeah, as flames go, it was quite nice.
You always notice, yeah, those ones.
What a thing to, you know what I mean?
I know.
Ha ha.
I embrace this stuff, though. I don't, though it's fine.
No, whatever. I would never know because I would never even think to look or to, like, you know what I mean? It's one of those things where you would read the comment, then you have to go back like, oh, okay, I guess so, yeah.
I know, and I'm just thinking, like, how quickly did they have to get up on the comment section just to let people know? first about the lobes.
These are professional trolls, man.
Dude, internet kudos goes a long way as far as an endorphin dump. Like, I'm not gonna lie, I've had my fair share of battles in the comments, and there's nothing really better of a time waster validation when you see like 6-7 thumbs up on your little snarky little comment. You're like, yeah, that's right. For the people. Let me go back to my shit life.
Yeah, but
I won the day with that comment about the kudos.
I thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, you definitely, it's one of those things you got to embrace it all, the bad and the good with the comment section, because
I don't want any part of it.
You got to have it all.
No, I don't want any part of it. It's a horrible world, but the world of comment sections.
And sometimes, you know, you get like people who will defend you. They'll be like, well, you know, who gives a shit?
But this is the thing, though. And this is why I have no part in Twitter or any of that stuff, because it's lovely when people say lovely things about you. But if you let that make you feel better, then it also kills
you. You open yourself up.
Mean. And I can't live my life like that. I give too much of a shit about what people think about me to let the world have an opinion. Mm-hmm. I would be an absolute microbe after one day. So sorry Twitter.
That just sounds like a Chrome extension filter. Just only have good things.
Yeah, it is, though, isn't it? It's your little safe space that they had on South Park.
Yeah,
filter out all these words.
There's a lot of red marks that you don't see, like censored.
Hey, that's a good one, actually. Yeah. Have you seen that Black Mirror episode, you know, where people are able to mute each other?
Right.
Everyone saying that you don't like, you just mute them. That's basically that world.
Wasn't that like a, what was that show? Black Mirror episode?
Yeah, that's
what that's the one. Yeah, yeah.
Black Mirror episode, right? Yeah.
I love
it's
Black
coming.
Mirror.
It's coming. Everyone. Yeah. Yeah, it's great. I
can't get enough.
I actually had a bad. Never mind.
Yeah, I think the early series, I think, was stronger. It's all good TV for sure, but I think the first two, I think, were just fantastic before Netflix kind of got hold of it. Yeah. It's only gone down in quality, but seriously, like, White Rabbit is absolutely phenomenal. As is 50 Million Merits. I think they'd break my heart.
For me, really quickly, first two seasons, I feel bad that I binged watched them because I was really depressed. Season three was strong because, like, there's some happiness in there. All right, we're good. I can.
Yeah, that. And it was nice, actually, wasn't it? What was it? The one where they
I think Hang the DJ and
Hang the DJ
was the one before that. Fantastic. Was really good.
Yeah, it was a place, wasn't it? San Junipero. That was it. They were both really good, actually.
Yeah. Like, hey, thank you, guys.
Yeah, you need a little bit of light, don't you? Yeah. And I think it's been nice that he's leavened it with a bit of optimism, but I just don't want it to go a little, like, too much that way.
Yeah.
It was also nice to not feel alone in the world. Like, when you someone else has a bleak outlook, you're like, yeah. Mm.
So what was the motivation behind Little Nightmares? Was it like a... Was it stories that you guys liked from before, movies that you guys were inspired by? Was it the art came first and the story came second? Like, what was the order?
I would say, yeah, the art came first, but it comes from a shared worldview. I would say it's like a pretentious way to say it. It's like we're all kind of got together because we kind of want to make the same kind of games, and we like see things in a, or at least we kind of experience the world in similar ways and stuff. So when we were talking about what the world could be and what the characters could be, we didn't really battle too much in that respect. Like Pello and Marcus and Jonas, the concept guys, they were like producing this unbelievable stuff. And like, so then it became my job to kind of create lore and like, why do these characters look this way? Well, I knew pretty much that Pella would be totally behind why they look like my reason for why they look this way. Mm. And so it was like, it was just kind of like, it's a little bit like, again, I hate that I'm going to say this, but you know, when you're jamming musically, if people kind of do something cool, you're not expecting you bounce off it. And it is, it's just that it's a really nice kind of way to work. Someone does something that inspires you, and then you kind of do something back, and then they work on that and stuff. So, yeah.
I do notice that with, in my experience, in smaller teams, more so than bigger teams. And I don't know exactly why that is. I feel like it's money related. With bigger teams, there's a lot of elements outside of making the game, I feel, that goes into the game. You know, how does the publisher feel? How's our marketability? How does this position myself better in the company? If it's not my idea, how do I polish it so it becomes more mine and I can present it better? You know, so a lot of those seem to happen more at the bigger studios I've been, but the smaller teams I have, it's always been kind of like what you said, jamming, where you inspire others with your idea and you're just like creating this huge snowball by the end that everyone's really proud of. It just builds into like a bigger and better idea, and everyone's polishing each other's work.
Yeah. And egos.
And egos, right?
Yeah, no, it's the ideal situation, really. If you can get that, that like, I really feed off people liking what I do, and I don't expect people to like what I do. I don't have that colossal ego, but like, I know I love what I love what I'm writing, and I love writing it. Oh, did you see the dog? There she is.
Hey.
Oh, it's chilling.
Yeah, so like, I basically just enjoy what I'm writing. And then I panic when I've got to hand it over. But there's no feeling like it when someone says, man, that's amazing. That's ace.
That's awesome.
You're like, ooh, cool.
So, okay, well, how do you feel when one of your colleagues says the opposite? It's like, hey, man.
You're wrong.
Shit.
Sorry, you don't know anything. You're fired.
I can't fire you. Get out.
Oh, I'm fired.
Oh, what are you responsible for? Okay, cool. I'm going to write out that feature in the story.
Yeah. I'm going to make friends with the CEO and he can fire you. No, it's like, I don't know.
It hurts. It always hurts first, right?
And it does, but generally when they tell you why, then you're like, that, all right, I agree with you. You know, generally, if something's crap, you know.
Yes.
You just don't want other people to know as well.
Right. You're like squinting at your hand.
Yeah, like that. How's this? Is this fine?
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, like, no, it's not fine. Oh, no. but it's usually like we have some really good kind of talks about it, and you go back. And if you get good feedback, again, there's nothing like it, because you go back and it's better than you could have done it first time around.
Right.
So, yeah.
And that's the thing I feel that probably lends into a crappy game becoming a crappier game, where you don't get the yeses from your team first. Like, you build this product, you're always thinking about the audience, but people tend to forget the first audience is the team itself. And it's very
Totally. To get
100% off, because we shipped squintingly games and handed it over to fans when, you know, there's a large portion of the team that don't like the game. Right. And it's very telling to how the Metacritic score and how people receive it. It's just building on shit, really.
Yeah, that's a that's a really good point, actually. A
couple of games going through that right now.
Yeah.
I would argue that the team loving it and the studio loving it is more important than thinking whether the audience will love it, because your focus is off them.
Yes. Because
got to be a reason. If your studios come together for any reason, it's because you're of a similar... Stop it, man. Stop it.
He's got an answer, too.
A certain reason. So demanding. And you know, like, if your team is bang behind it, you've got to stand behind it then. At least you stand for something then. But if all you're doing is thinking, oh, maybe this scored well in the audience appreciation test that we did. Oh, well, let's do that then. Well, that's a great creative reason for doing anything, isn't it? Mm-hmm. If you're all excited by the thing that you're putting out, it's, for me, either you know nothing if the audience hates it, or at least you stood behind it. And I think you're absolutely right there. But I would say, sorry, audience, you're not important to our audience. hopefully,
Yeah,
but I mean, hopefully they will see the passion in what you put out, and they will love it then. But they have to come secondary to me.
Right. Because a studio, I think, can never guarantee the success of the game, right? Only the internal reception of it. Like, if they are proud, if we as a team like what we put out, you can have 100% of that no matter what. And so you just put it out and just see, really. And if it's something you're proud of, at least you can walk away from that being proud of it. Yeah.
I'm describing an ideal situation, really, though. I mean, because there's so many studios who are just a bunch of people who turn up for work every day and do it and go home. And if they all agree that something's good, there's no guarantee that it is. So, I mean, you have to be in a studio that has a reason that it's making games.
Yes.
Then if you've got like an auteur making movies, it's more interesting than just some studio churning out crap after crap after crap. So you do have to have that passion, and there's a reason that people come to your studio. And when you have that, then you can maybe forget about the audience. Otherwise, yeah. So I'm hedging my bets there. I don't want to offend anyone by saying, you know, we don't really put them first, but we do by not, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, right.
By listening to ourselves.
Yeah, definitely.
And you're protecting the integrity of your product by letting the professionals do it.
Yes. And you can't innovate by playing off the audience. You got to have to take the risk.
Yeah, that's it. Because, I mean, sometimes people don't know what they want till they get it. And I think that's a lot of the trouble with media in general now, is like one person takes a risk, or one group of people takes a risk. Everyone else goes, ooh, that's popular. We also love this now.
Battery.
That's it. Yeah, that's it. But it's the same with everything. Well, you know, Harry Potter was popular for some reason, but now you have endless supernatural series of books.
Yeah.
It's just, Twilight was popular. What else can we do? Werewolves?
Yeah. There was someone else
taking a risk with something. Was there? That was just a guess.
There was a weird werewolves phase after vampires, so that they tried to like really push, but didn't work as well.
Yeah, it's not as romantic a myth, though, is it really? As vampires, werewolves, it would just turn into dogs.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
Are those flea bites?
No. Stop licking yourself.
Yeah, it's not as romantic.
Hey, what are you sniffing down there? Oh,
sorry. Yeah, sorry, man. Yeah. You're not even a dog.
Yeah. Well, I was looking at my clock, and we have successfully been podcasting for over an hour, and I know the time flew by, but we made a deal at the beginning of the podcast. Brandon and I would just shut the hell up and give you an opportunity to take over the soundboards, talk directly to our audience to shout out, promote, raise awareness, or, you know, just, you know, get people excited about something that you're excited about. So without further ado, sir, the floor is yours.
I told you I would think about this and I haven't, but now do you know what I'm going to say? I'm going to say, please go out and buy and play Static, because not enough of you are. All right, we are super proud of that. You, so many people don't know that the people who made Little Nightmares also made another game. So go out, buy yourself a PSVR, treat yourselves. Mm-hmm. Be afraid.
How do you spell Static, just for the people who are listening?
S-T-A-T-I-K.
Thank you.
You see, we put the K on the end to sound a little bit, you know, youthful and cool.
Oh, it definitely helps for search engine optimization. Like, okay, Static of the sea. Like, oh, tide, bounce. You know?
You know what sucked, though? When we, like, we came out with the Little Nightmares teaser, it was called Hunger, and that was actually part of the discussion.
Mm.
We had to change the name, because when people search for Hunger Game, come up like that. Damn you! That's a battle royale again. A source of all evil, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Hunger Games.
I blame Hunger Games Fortnite and H1Z1 and all that stuff. The Battle Royale modes, at least. Anyway, well, if that's all you want to shout out and promote, then I'm going to let that be all right.
Yeah, I'm gonna play favorites, I'm afraid, because over a million people have played Little Nightmares now, so Static needs a few. So, well,
there you go.
Need some love over there, yeah.
Yeah, give us some love, man. Give some love.
All right. Well, I'm Larry Charles. I'm saying goodnight.
This is Brandon Pham. See you guys next week.
And I've been Dave Mervick. Love you.
So thanks for listening to our podcast. I hope that you're a subscriber, but if you aren't, please feel free to follow us on any of the major podcast platforms, especially iTunes or Spotify. You can find show notes and more resources available to help you become a successful game developer. Just go on over to our website, www.gamedevunchained.com. If you're interested in keeping the conversation going, then definitely come check us out in Discord, where we chat in real time for After Show Tuesdays to discuss episodes, and Feedback Fridays, where we share screenshots on the projects that we're currently working on. If you go over to patreon.com, you can support our podcast financially. And if you do so, you get access to Life Unchained, our on-the-pulse, unfiltered game dev gossip content that we make exclusively for our Patreon supporters. And as usual, you can keep in touch and follow our happenings on Facebook and Twitter. That's Game Dev Unchained, the podcast.